That's right. The Drive is live.
We're back.
The Drive is live. They are back. Calm down, man.
Number one. Oh, we're back. It's a Tuesday. That's a Monday. We're back. We're live. Let's go.
Yeah, that one in the holster, boy. Saturday must have been like straight sex for Tyler.
It was fun. What was more fun were the clowns on Twitter. I had a blast Saturday.
I bet you did. Yeah.
Yeah, it was super awesome.
Your Aggies, your quarterback, your young quarterback.
Marcel.
Looked a lot better than what Texas's quarterback brought forth. We'll get to that because I do want to get to Arch, but football is back, baby. This game week, damn it.
Hell yeah.
We got the Eagles and
about damn time.
Parsonless Cowboys coming up in 2 days. We got the Chiefs and the Chargers on Friday. Got another good college football slate. And then the NFL full go on Sunday, including the Texans as they travel to L.A. to take on the Rams. So a big thing real quick. We talked a little bit about Arch, and we will talk about Arch because we had to. That was a big story we missed yesterday over the weekend. But what the hell happened to Bill? That one... I'm not going to say I was surprised that they won. I'm not going to lie to you. I felt like Bill would figure defense out pretty quickly. Like I thought the Carolina defense would be not coming out of the half in a game where you're still within striking distance and the first play of the game is a 75-yard to the house. That surprised me that his defense, maybe the offense may struggle a little bit, but the defense, they just seemed to just not know what the hell was going on. That one surprised me.
Hey, if you watch that game, Chief, they could have hung 70.
They could have. I had to turn, man. I started watching Hunting Wives.
They could have hung 70. They could have hung 70 on them cats, man. And it was, I'm going to tell you, man, you look at it, Bill just can't get right. Bill ain't been right since Brady left his ass. And Matt Patricia goes out there.
He did make the playoffs the first year after him. But then after that, boy, it was.
Yeah, man.
They started bringing in Ohio State's defensive coordinator, who shout out to Matt Patricia, who was able to flip sides of the ball. He was an offensive coordinator last time.
He's done it all, man.
And now he's the defensive coordinator.
I'm sure he learned a lot while he was on the offensive side of the ball. I'm sure he learned a lot, these guys.
But no, man. That one. I didn't see it. I mean, not an ass kicking like that, where their TCU and Sonny and Kendall felt like they could do whatever the hell they wanted to do all game.
I'm going to tell you, I'm a big Sonny fan. I'm a big Kendall Briles fan. I know Kendall personally. His time is at Arkansas. I knew him a little bit before that, but I got to know him really well at Arkansas. It's good to see. I was rooting for them boys in that situation. Everybody picking Bill Belichick, talking about how great Bill Belichick is and what they're going to do and how they're going, you know, how great he's been. You see what's starting to pour out now, which I think this is convenience, right? And this is the world we live in. All of a sudden, there's reports of how Bill was going about his recruiting, leaving kids hanging in the lobby and never meeting with them after flying them in kind of deal. And, boy, they're starting to surface. I don't know how real those reports are, but we're going to see if Bill can bounce back.
He did have a top 3 transfer portal.
Well, hell, I think
the ACC.
Well, hell, I think they had 70 new kids on that team.
We'll see.
I think I heard him say last night 70 new players in that program.
Yeah, he did the Deion thing.
That beat Deion.
Except Deion beat TCU.
That's right.
Did the Deion thing, except they beat him.
Deion invited everybody in there with his Louis Vuitton luggage comments.
Yeah,
it is interesting.
Except Deion brought his son with him, though. That's the difference.
Yeah,
that Lopez fella. Tyler, I swear before God, and I will get to the text, when I saw Brad Johnson's kid walk out there, I said, Max Johnson is still in college?
Oh, yeah. Yes, he is. Absolutely.
I thought we were beyond COVID years. Max is old enough to get. How in the
he
hell?
He got a medical. Did he get a medical?
How many medicals?
I don't know how many he's had.
I'm not sure.
He quarterback for Jimbo and not Jimbo's last season.
It's the same age as Bill's girlfriend.
I think he was there.
Is he really?
Yep.
Are you kidding?
Calzada,
nope.
Whatever.
Bill's girlfriend and Max are the same age.
I did not know that. I was fixing to ask how old he is. That is great.
That terrible thing of when it was 41-7. That was her age when he was 41.
When he was 41, she was 7?
Anyway.
That is tremendous. I must have had the volume turned down.
They did.
Good for her.
Kirk Herbstreit.
Kirk didn't bring it up.
No, he didn't say that. I just saw that.
Never would he do that to the great Bill.
No, not Bill. Oh, he was petting his dog. But
what is Bill going to do, man? How you rebound from this one? That was an ass kicking at home with all the world watching. Right? Did you see Bill's pregame, the Holly Rowe interview?
Holly Rowe, yeah.
I mean, how uncomfortable. Come on, man. Why? That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
That's what he always does. But that's him and Greg Popovich.
When you got 6 championships and you're in the league, 6 Super Bowls and you're in the league and stuff.
You know, Teddy Bruschi said he's focused.
Come on, man. You can't go to college. I mean, that was awful. Why would he do that to her?
It wasn't just to her. Bill does that to everybody.
Come on, Bill. And that's good for you to go out there and get your ass whooped like that for being such a stiff man. Yeah, that was good for Bill.
Yeah, it was.
Good. Boy, after that first touchdown, they panned that damn crowd. That old 24-year-old or whatever sitting up there on that rail, just watch smiling bigger than I'll get out. Oh, Lawrence Taylor up there, filling himself.
Michael Jordan's ass was up there filling himself.
Oh yeah, and then boy,
that Gummit was up there. Roy Williams is up there filling himself.
Wind came out of them sails, boys.
We're on to Charlotte.
Yeah, I don't know. What
yeah, that. We're on to Charlotte. You're right.
Charlotte, yeah.
That's about right. I wonder how that's going to play in college.
All right. Listen, so a coach that has had success lately, D'Amico Ryans, the head coach of the Texans. It's go time now, and he already has talked about this. Speaking to the media yesterday, you hadn't heard this. He's already telling you what he's been staying up about is the key of the game Sunday.
This game, I think, ultimately, it is right now, as I continue to go through it in my mind, I think it really hinges upon both offensive lines blocking two really talented defensive lines. The Rams have one of the best young defensive lines in the NFL, Verse, Fisk, I mean, Turner, Young. It was a young group, and those guys play, they get after it. They play relentless. They're tough. They're going to be a really, really good group to challenge our offensive line, and the same for their offensive line versus our defensive line. We have a really good group up front under the strengths of our team, and we have to, it's going to be a challenge to see how that shapes up, but both offensive lines are going to have to play well, and whoever wins that battle, I think, will ultimately decide the game.
Yeah, I think he's probably pretty accurate right there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this is, both of these teams can be, you can say, are driven by their defensive line. The thing is, the Texans have a little bit more behind that defensive line than I think the Rams do in terms of a secondary. But nonetheless, I do think the story in this game is about the lines of scrimmage, right? And I tell you, Ron, people are going to spend a lot of time talking about these defensive lines, and rightfully so, and that's fine. I mean, I can't wait to watch our defensive line eat, no doubt about it. It's going to be entertaining. But the big question here is, D'Amico mentioned one of them, which offensive line plays better. And I have no idea what we're going to get out of our offensive line.
No idea what we're going to
get out of the Texans' offensive line. But I'm going to take it one step forward, one step further. The other part of it, the offensive coordinator. I got a little bit more faith in their offensive coordinator, knowing what he's working with and kind of working around some of the hiccups and some of the issues that they may have.
You mean Sean McVay?
Yes. I mean, I got a little bit more confidence in his resume. Now, that may be foul. Some people may say it's foul. I've never seen Nick Caley. It's just a matter of having never seen him. The offensive coordinator is going to play just as much into this game as that offensive line is. Hands down. No question about it. And you can obviously throw the quarterback in there with it, but it is going to be, this is a game about, yes, offensive line play, but you better believe that 1B, if that's 1A, 1B is offensive coordinators.
Yeah, and I think these things are connected, Clint, in this game, is especially from the Texans end, as you said, got a little bit more confidence in how they navigate it with McVay and Stafford. But with the Texans end is what is going to be very crucial, and I don't think this is just up to the offensive line, is can they play the game in which they are dictating how they go about business? You know what I mean? Like, can they dictate when they want to run the ball?
Yeah.
When they want to pass the ball? When they and not forced into the Rams defense being able to dictate. And that could be dictated by score. That could be dictated by the success they get into the run game. That could be dictated by a lot of things. But to me, is the one thing, again, like you said, I don't know exactly at all what the Texans offensive line is really going to do when they get real bullets, real game plan against a team. But I also really don't know what they look like when their opponent knows, has a pretty fair idea of what they're going to do. Like, that's the other part. And I think that's just not going to be good for this offense anyway. So I think a big key to this is that they get to dictate how Nick Caley's able to call the game. Right? Like, the running game's going to be extremely important.
Yeah.
The Texans defense keeping the game to a space that they can run whatever they want to run is going to be extremely important. Because, as he said with that D-line, I got to believe, as he said, he's thinking up, he's staying up a lot, D'Amico. I think the thing that D'Amico probably really stays up a lot is, you know, what happens and how does my offensive line perform when Jarrett Verse and Young and that group know more times than not they got to drop back the pass.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big key, is can they dictate how they run offense in this game.
Yeah, and look, the other part of this too, Ron, is I think whichever head coach, obviously whichever head coach, their expertise, you got offensive-minded Sean McVay, you got defensive-minded D'Amico Ryans. That matchup is going to dictate how this game goes. And the Texans are just not built right now in a way. I don't think they're built. We'll see. I don't think they're built in a way to get into a quote-unquote shootout. Now, I don't believe this is going to be like Tampa Bay a couple of years ago, but if Matthew Stafford, Davante Adams, Puka Nacua, and company, if they come out there and all of a sudden they have their way and score a few points early on, what does that do for the offense? So this is a D'Amico Ryans defensive coordinator versus Sean McVay offensive coordinator. D'Amico's got to keep Sean under wraps to give his offense a chance to get their feet wet, get a feel for what it is, to give his offensive play caller a chance to get his feet wet and feel what he wants to do and how he wants to approach it and be somewhat comfortable in his first game. So, yeah, man, I it is about O-line play, no doubt about it. It's about the offensive coordinator being able to handle it. But I'm telling you, these two head coaches matched up head-to-head is going to be must-see TV.
Yeah, I don't think that – and maybe we've been able to just watch this group so much – I don't think the Texans are going to allow the Rams to have this as a shootout.
Oh, I don't either.
Listen, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I mean, Puka and Davante Adams and I mean, they got some dudes over there now. And Matt Stafford is, at least at this point, borderline elite. Sean is an elite, you know, play caller and designer. So they got some stuff. But this Texas defense is so good, I don't think it's going to be a shutout or shootout. But if they roll out here, Clinton, and this combination of Nick Chubb and Damian Pierce and Woody Marks roll out here, and it's 2.5 yards a carry, and you know it's stopping them, and you're looking at a lot of third and sixes and longs, the game might be close, but still, that means the Rams get to dictate what is happening, and they cannot. They've got to get out of that.
The point is D'Amico's got his hands full with some really, really with future Hall of Famers.
Yep.
And he's got to do. And I agree with you. I don't think it's a shootout. I don't think in any way, shape, or form. I don't think it's a shootout. But D'Amico's got to stymie this offense in a way that's going to allow his offense some breathing room to try to figure out what the hell they are, who they are, what they do well, what they don't do well. D'Amico, this is a team that's going to be driven by their defense. And start Saturday again. You got Davante Adams, Puka Nacua, Tyler Higbee, Kyron Williams, Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay. You got some legit dudes coming
at
you.
They still got that skinny dude, Tutu Atwell.
Yeah, they do.
They still got number 5.
Yeah. They do.
Again, I just don't think the Rams are going to run away from the Texans unless the offense helps them.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going
to
run.
Shootout's the wrong word. Point, if you get to where you're immediately playing from behind, that puts unnecessary pressure on CJ. It puts unnecessary pressure on Nick Caley.
To go away from the game plan.
Right. And the reality of it is, Ron, all year long, this is going to be a defensive-driven football team, and the defense is going to have to keep them in it, and the offense is going to have to make enough plays to win it.
All right, that was Football Talk on Sports Radio 610. It is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. All right, I've been trying to figure out what in the hell happened in Columbus with Arch Manning.
Mm.
Well, somebody who has been an Arch supporter lets us know. We'll see if we agree. That's coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Away, Gus. Play fake. Manning. He'll throw it this time. Oh, it's intercepted. Matthews Jr.
Tyler, man.
Just want to put the listener like they're there.
The enjoyment of Tyler.
At Ohio State.
Yeah, you better, man.
Just trying to set the stage.
Listen, that was the most anticipated game of the weekend. And I don't know. We learned a lot, I think. At least at this point. Now, none of it is the end-all, be-all. This is what he's going to be. All of this and that. But I know I learned one thing that I have been wondering for a long time, and then it came about. But this was Dan Orlowski. ESPN does college football and the NFL. This was his explanation on why Arch Manning had the performance he had.
I would say this. Arch Manning and Sark got Bill Belichicked. And I know Coach Belichick plays tonight. Arch will not see another defense that is as sophisticated, as complicated, as much they change pre-snap to post-snap. I'm not telling America that Arch didn't have some misses. Of course he had some misses. Mechanically, he got worse as the game went on. That game, in specific to Arch, went the way it did because of Matt Patricia for Ohio State and that Ohio State secondary.
All right, there is Dan Orlovsky. You agree with it? You agree with his assessment? I tell you what, Josh Hoover was not Bill Belichick last night. And he actually went against Bill Belichick. But your thoughts on what Dan had to say in his explanation of what happened with Arch?
Yeah, look, I think there's some truth to what he looked at on the defensive side of the football was next level. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But the reality is to me, this isn't about a pass or not a pass. It's about watch the game and evaluate the game and what did you see. And there's no doubt he was going against a schematically ridiculously difficult defense. Not to mention probably the most talented, if not definitely a top three talent defense as well. There's no doubt that everybody that jumped to conclusions and wanted to put this kid in the Heisman chair assumed that he would be ready to, stare this opportunity and this level of adversity in the face and play well. He didn't. Right? He wasn't ready for the moment. He wasn't ready for what Ohio State threw at him. I think there are probably some people out there that anointed him from a ability standpoint. I mean, some of the craziest takes I've heard in the last year, 2 years, was around Arch Manning's athletic ability, his ability to run the football. And I think it was clear in that game, when you play against that level of talent, you better be able to beat them with your mind and your arm. If you're Arch Manning, and I do think that both were exposed. I think he appeared to be very young from the mental approach.
That was the part that got me, Clint.
And I think there was some flaw from the physical approach.
The part that got me, Clint. That was the most surprising thing to me was. Clearly, the moment was too big for him. Like you would think, like he has had to deal with a lot of pressure, being who he is. Every time he performs, there's just more added to him. He looked like he was like rushed at everything. Yeah. Every one of his throws,
the game was moving very fast.
That didn't seem like that. I would not have expected that.
The game was moving very fast for him. The last time that we saw him get run at quarterback, I believe it was against Georgia. They couldn't protect the other fella, so they put him in there and thought that his legs were going to be a difference, and it wasn't. You go a whole offseason in today's world, these kids do not see live pads thumping, action, chaos in the pocket, and then you go, okay, your first rattle out of the box as a starter after not seeing anything for 4 or 5 months, however long it's been. It's going to be Ohio State in the shoe, crowd noise, and a ridiculously talented bunch of defensive players and a defensive coordinator. And he wasn't ready for the moment. It's that easy. There's no passes. No, the reality of it is dude has not played very much football, and he seemed to be overwhelmed in the first game of the season against arguably the best team in the country. That's where we're at. And yeah. And mechanically, I don't think it's flawed. I'll be honest with you. I don't think it's flawed or bad mechanics. I think it's low ceiling. I mean, relatively speaking, you look at both of his uncles. Neither one of his uncles were dropping their arm slot and flipping a cross route, in stride the way Pat Mahomes does, the way some of these other loose-armed quarterbacks do. And he's not – maybe he is down the road. Right now, he's not that guy. He is a stand-in-the-pocket, throw-the-route-tree kind of quarterback. He is a process what's going on defensively, sit in the pocket, get the ball out accurately, and move on. He's not – he can run around against UTSA. No offense right there. Coach, love you. Love your squad, man.
Damn.
He can go – who was the other one? It was UTSA, and who was the other one last year? Louisiana Monroe or somebody?
Yeah, he gave
Mississippi State was one of them. He played against Mississippi State. You can go run around and be one of the more athletic guys on that field, but when you get to the college football playoffs, it ain't going to matter. You're going to have to stand in there and process. And I think that all of that failed him Saturday afternoon.
The one thing that really came clear, and I'm sure, like I said, Tyler's having a field day with this. Tyler has just been over the top with, he's going to win the Heisman, all of them, MVP next year. The one thing, Clint, that I could not ever get past was the way he was talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, a lot of it has to do, and maybe not all of it has to do with his last name, but the way he was talked about, the number one recruit, he was talked about in the manner of guys like Caleb Williams, guys like, Tebow. I mean, those guys, when they came out, when they were freshmen and they came in, he was talked about in a major way. You normally don't see a guy like Quinn Ewers hold that guy back for 2 years. And that always was weird to me. As Texas was driving and they made the playoff last year and they were good the year before, it was always weird to me that Quinn is really holding that guy back. Because I'm telling you, I said it to you before the show, I can't remember who the hell that was that left that Texas game, but Caleb Williams got in the game and that guy had to transfer. It is now the starting quarterback of the New Orleans Saints, Spencer Rattler. He had to transfer to South Carolina, right? And we've seen it. Like, Chris Leak, luckily he graduated, but his ass would have been gone too. He wasn't going to hold Tebow to the bench another year. You've seen many examples. I don't know who was there at Auburn before Cam came from Blaine College, but he was not going to stop Cam Newton from getting the starting job and getting in the lineup. And that was always strange to me that he could not overtake Quinn for 2 years. And I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all, but as soon as that game started, you could see there probably wasn't stuff that just jumped out in practice where Sark was like, oh, God, like we got to get him on the field in a way that I'm sure Lincoln did when he saw Caleb Williams at Oklahoma and was like, God, man, Spencer's a nice player, but this dude here, I can't keep him off the field. And hell, when he came in against Georgia, I thought, well, maybe this is it. Hell, they took his ass out at halftime and put Quinn back in. So that part became more clear that, as you were saying, there's nothing that really, if you take away the last name and everything, there's nothing that really jumps out that says, all right, man, whoever that was in front of Trevor Lawrence, man, your time is just as soon as he gets on the field, we got to go with him. There was none of that, and it kind of came up.
Well, I mean, here's the deal, Ron, and it's going to be a ways down the schedule, but when they get to Penn State, which is mid-season for them, heck, it's November 1, so it's second half of the season. When they get to Penn State, how does Drew Aller play against his defense?
Yeah.
Right? Little things like that are going to start to matter. Yeah. Even though it's mid-season, it's not the beginning of the year, if Drew struggles, then everybody he's going to get that pass, which it may not even matter. He may play well enough between now and then that it may not matter, but... But that's going to be the tell. Is do we look back on this thing and say, boy, Manning was extremely overrated? Or do you look back on this thing and say, this is an all-time great defense? That's ultimately what we're up against here.
All right, coming up, big weekend. Even though they just got a split, a big weekend for the Astros. And I think it's time to pull the plug on something with the Astros. I think you know what it is. We'll discuss that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents... The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Altuve bids for a two-run home run. It's gone! Jose Altuve gives the Astros a five-run lead. It's now 8-3.
Just don't lose series, baby. Just don't lose series. There was Altuve as the Astros. They take they split that series with the Angels. They have a three-game lead over the Mariners. Mariners dropped some of those games over the weekend, but they go ahead and take that. Altuve behind that, but that wasn't the big story. The big story to me of why this weekend was such a big deal, very similar to what someone just tweeted in. We'll get to that in just a second. I just do want to address something. I just, like, guys, you guys have to stop getting emotional and not ignore what you're hearing from the texter who likes to call me apparently S Show. It's just Show, Ron, whatever. You know, no need to get a little, no need to add.
That's kind of creative. That is kind of creative.
He told me you can hear the anger of whatever. It's one game, S Show. Damn. I said to him, Well, what do you have issue with what I said? Give the kid some time. It was one game, buddy. Again, folks, I'm not saying, as I said before, it ain't the end-all, be-all of who he is. I'm just simply saying you can clearly see after he played, after being in the program for 2 years, after having some experience, you can see that usually guys that are talked up like him, I gave examples. I'll give you another. Trevor Lawrence, Kelly Bryant had just taken Clemson to the college football playoff when there was only four teams. They got obliterated by Oklahoma in it, but he took them there. Came and started the next year. Fooled around and got him a couple of games. Then that long-haired Trevor Lawrence fellow was standing in the wings. Dude, he got on the field. Kelly Bryant had to then go to Missouri. Like, that's all I'm saying is, we looked out there, you could see, like, he may be a very good quarterback down the line. He is not, like, the guys like Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, Tebow, we brought up. Those guys are not usually held down by seventh-round, sixth-round picks. Right? Like, they usually, like, you would have thought, and hell, I think Quinn probably thought in his mind, or start looking around some of these ACC schools. Maybe I get a year. But usually you don't. That's all I'm saying. I don't think that the guy stinks or that we should end it. But the thought that he was talked up like he was Andrew Luck and Trevor Lawrence and those things, I think you could clearly see, like, that's not the case.
That ship has sailed. Now, again, what does it mean? I don't know. But that ship has sailed. I don't think that anybody in the right mind, even the most avid UT fan, there's no way that you didn't listen to the hype leading up to that game and the conversations around that quarterback, what the last name means, everything. And it was good. Look, it was entertaining as hell. There's no way that you listened to that and then watched that game and said, yeah, this is one of a generational type guy. This is not, I mean, look, the ship has sailed for him to jump on the field. The Tua moment, when Tua jumps on the field and throws the touchdown against Georgia immediately. As you mentioned, all the quarterbacks that you mentioned, like these guys that they get their first run and it's like, wow, you're on to something. That it didn't happen for Arch Manning. Again, what does it mean? It's up to you to decide what the hell you want to make of it. But the reality of it is the hype, the conversations, there's a lot of people that are eating some crow and Arch didn't answer the bell. It's that easy.
No, yeah. I mean,
it shouldn't surprise anybody. Hell, be honest with you. I mean, like the conversations were crazy. I mean, I hope, like, I'm rooting for the kid. I hope, like, hell, he would have like met those expectations. But the reality of it is, you're talking about 10 guys over the last 50 years of football that have done that.
I don't mean to set you up. How many years before you started at Arkansas. What was it before you got the reins?
1 year.
1 year. So your sophomore year, you got the reins. Mm-hmm. Your first. Let's even try this. Who was your first game against a real opponent?
Yeah, like I don't remember. It's been so long, Ron. Be honest with you. I remember Damian Craig and Auburn.
Auburn. Do you like that was your first year?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember feeling as confused as he looked? Do you remember feeling as uncomfortable as he looked?
Yeah. I'll tell you, Florida in 97 was a good one. Set an SEC record for sacks in a game. Yeah, absolutely. I've been there.
Yeah, and I just bring that up because that is generally how I think most young most quarterbacks that get the reins in. Yep. Then there are other guys that you look in there, maybe they're confused, but it doesn't look like that.
The guys that you're talking about, the guys that he had an opportunity to join, Arch Manning, that is, had he played lights out and won on the road against Ohio State, he had the opportunity to join the group of guys that you mentioned, the Trevor Lawrences, the Tim Tebows, the Deshaun Watsons, the guys that in college, when they took over the reins, Tua is a good one. I mean, when they took over the reins, it was like, look out. I mean, this guy's got something special. He may be running around like a chicken with his head cut off, but he's got something. There's an elite something there. That did not surface for Arch Manning. Period, point blank, any way you want to slice it. That did not surface. Now, if you want to get into the deeper conversations, I do. I think there is – we got to wait and see if Texas has necessary speed to compete with the top 10 teams in America. We got to see if Steve Sarkisian can figure things out and be able to create opportunities for his players inside the 10-yard line with the game on the line against good defenses the way that some of these other coaches do. Like, all of that, there are layers and layers and layers of conversations that need to be had, but the biggest one is Arch Manning had an opportunity to join the likes of the all-time greats in college football that just had some level of it factor. I don't care how bad it is. I don't care that I'm on the road. I don't care who the defensive coordinator is. I don't care how good the defense is. Damn it, it's a tight ball game, and I'm going to make something happen get points on the board.
Or I have something that allows me.
Yeah.
Like Vince. I've got something that allows me to get out of stuff even if I'm if I'm confused.
Yes. Yes. That ship has sailed. That opportunity was missed by Arch. Now we'll see if they play three ducks.
Yeah.
The next
before
three
they
games.
Go before they play Florida.
So he's going to have plenty of time to get his bearings straight and keep this thing moving. But the reality of it is, the most avid Longhorn fan, there's no way you don't look at that and say, damn, boy, what could have been? That would have been a fun ride if that kid would have jumped on the scene all of a sudden and literally today be the Heisman front runner instead of being the Heisman front runner Friday before the game.
Yeah. By the way, are we as a show, are we prepared to pull the plug on Lance McCullers having any kind of high leverage, meaningful appearances for the Houston Astros?
You betcha.
Feels that way.
You betcha.
Hate to say it, but it feels that way.
Yes, indeed.
I think I hinted towards this Friday when you were gone, Clint. I said, I think we've reached the point once Joe said he may be coming out of the bullpen. This may be short term, though. Yeah. I said, I think Lance has probably thrown his last pitch when it comes to meaningful, high-leverage situations, and they tried to bring him in again. Now I will not blame Lance anymore. Like, this ain't on Lance, right? If Joe decides to bring Lance in with the game on the line, and we have a pretty good feel of what Lance is bringing, he's not confident. He is not confident throwing the ball for strikes. He's trying to be real fine and perfect, and then, hell, sometimes it looks like he just doesn't have any idea where it's going. I'm not blaming Lance anymore. Lance should not pitch in any high leverage situations, and to be honest with you, Lance should not be on the playoff roster. If Justin Verlander was held off that bad boy last year, Lance should be held off of it this year.
Boy, you're dead ass right, and it's a crying ass shame right now given what's going on. Yeah, it's crazy to think that Lance McCullers can't help this rotation and this pitching staff.
Or the bullpen.
That's what I mean. I'm trying to find the right staff. The whole thing. Anybody, anywhere. You take your pick. I mean, let's be honest with you. I mean, there's at this point in time, there's guys that you'd rather that still have an outside shot of helping this team long term that you'd rather have those kind of mop up minutes.
I've got more confidence that Chaz will throw more strikes.
Speaking of Chaz.
Strikes.
Melton's sub 150 and still getting pinch hits, and Chaz is not, for the record. Sub
150. Don't come at me about white boy Chaz.
Sub 150. Speaking of.
Yeah, it's just over for Lance.
But, yeah, I'm out on Lance. And you hit the nail on the head. My heart would have been hurt. Boy, my Astro heart would have been down and out this weekend had them – them trio of starters not did their
now that game. Was big. Yeah, Javier, six innings. I mean, he goes six innings, no hit ball. Ryan Abreu happened in. Arrigetti, he goes six and a third. He strung together a couple of good ones here lately. One hit, one earned, eight Ks. These guys do got to stop walking, guys. And Lance came in, and Lance's second inning. Right, did too much there is what happened to him. And then Luis Garcia, the big one yesterday, six innings, three earned, all quality starts from all three, six Ks, no walks yesterday in his first start. Those are great signs, especially with Lance. Just at this point, man, it feels unusable right now. Feels like you just cannot take a chance with him. All right, coming up, D'Amico Ryans, he kind of shed some light on a really important thing going into Sunday's game. It's good news. We'll let you hear from him, and we'll continue. Game week, Texans and Rams, and a reason why I think many of you should be extremely excited, not just because the season has started, but extremely excited about what the potential of what you will see on Sunday with your Texans. That's coming up next. That's right. The Drive is live.
We're back.
The Drive is live. They are back. Calm down, man.
Number one, we're back. It's a Tuesday. That's a Monday. We're back. We're live. Let's go.
Yeah, that one in the holster, boy. Saturday must have been like straight sex for Tyler.
It was fun. What was more fun were the clowns on Twitter. I had a blast Saturday.
I bet you did. Yeah,
it was super awesome.
Your Aggies, your quarterback, your young quarterback.
Marcel.
Looked a lot better than what Texas's quarterback brought forth. We'll get to that because I do want to get to Arch, but football is back, baby. This game week, damn it.
Hell yeah.
We got the Eagles and
about damn time.
Harsonless Cowboys coming up in 2 days. We got the Chiefs and the Chargers on Friday. Got another good college football slate. And then the NFL full go on Sunday, including the Texans as they travel to LA to take on the Rams. So a big thing, real quick. We talked a little bit about Arch, and we will talk about Arch because we had to. That was a big story we missed yesterday over the weekend. But what the hell happened to Bill? That one. I'm not gonna say I was surprised that they won. I'm not gonna lie to you. I felt like Bill would figure defense out pretty quickly. Like I thought the Carolina defense would be, but not coming out of the half in a game where you're still within striking distance, and the first play of the game is a 75-yard to the house. Like that surprised me that his defense. Maybe the offense may struggle a little bit, but the defense, they just seemed to just not know what the hell was going on. That one surprised me.
Hey, if you watch that game, Chief, they could have hung 70.
They could have. I had to turn, man. I started watching Hunting Wives.
They could have hung 70. They could have hung 70 on them cats, man. And it was, I'm going to tell you, man, you look at it, Bill just can't get right. Bill ain't been right since Brady left his ass. And Matt Patricia goes out there.
He did make the playoffs the first year after him. But then after that, boy, it was.
Yeah, man.
When he started bringing in Ohio State's defensive coordinator, who shout out to Matt Patricia, who was able to flip sides of the ball. He was an offensive coordinator last time.
He's done it all, man.
And now he's a defensive coordinator.
I'm sure he learned a lot while he was on the offensive side of the ball. I'm sure he learned a lot, these guys.
But, no, man, that one. I didn't see it. I mean, not an ass kicking like that. Where they're TCU and Sonny and Kendall felt like they could do whatever the hell they wanted to do all game.
I'm going to tell you, I'm a big Sonny fan. I'm a big Kendall Briles fan. I know Kendall personally. His time is at Arkansas. I knew him a little bit before that, but I got to know him really well at Arkansas. It's good to see. I was rooting for them boys in that situation. Everybody picking Bill Belichick, talking about how great Bill Belichick is and what they're going to do and how they're going, you know, how great he's been. You see what's starting to pour out now, which I think this is convenience, right? And this is the world we live in. All of a sudden, there's reports of how Bill was going about his recruiting, leaving kids hanging in the lobby and never meeting with them after flying them in kind of deal. And,
Yeah. Boy,
they're starting to surface. I don't know how real those reports are, but we're going to see if Bill can bounce back.
He did have a top three transfer portal.
Well, hell, I think
the ACC.
Well, hell, I think they had 70 new kids on that team.
That's what Danny Cannell said. We'll see.
I think I heard him say last night 70 new players in that program.
Yeah, he did the Deion thing.
That beat Deion.
Except Deion beat TCU.
That's right.
Did the Deion thing, except they beat him.
Deion invited everybody in there with his Louis Vuitton luggage comments. It is interesting.
Except Deion brought his son with him, though. that's the difference.
Yeah,
that Lopez fella. Tyler, I swear before God, and I will get to the text, when I saw Brad Johnson's kid walk out there, I said, Max Johnson is still in college?
Oh, yeah. Yes, he is. Absolutely.
I thought we were beyond COVID years. Max is old enough to get – how in the
he
hell –
He got a medical. I think he get a medical.
How many medicals?
I don't know how many he's had.
I'm not sure.
He quarterbacked for Jimbo and not Jimbo's last season.
It's the same age as Bill's girlfriend.
I think he was
actually.
I think he was there
is
with
– Is he really?
Yep.
Are you kidding
Calzada,
me?
Nope. Whatever.
Bill's girlfriend and Max are the same age.
I did not know that. I was fixing to ask how old he is. That is great.
Everybody had that terrible thing of when it was 41-7. That was her age when he was 41.
When he was 41, she was 7?
Anyway.
That is tremendous. I must have had the volume turned down.
They did.
Good for her.
Kirk Herbstreit.
Kirk didn't bring it up?
No, he didn't say that. I just saw that.
Never would he do that to the great Bill.
No, not Bill. He was petting his dog. But
what is Bill going to do, man? How you rebound from this one? That was an ass kicking at home with all the world watching. Right? Did you see Bill's pregame, the Holly Rowe interview?
Holly Rowe, yeah.
I mean, how uncomfortable. Come on, man. Why? That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
That's what he always
does.
But that's him and Greg Popovich.
When you got six championships and you're in the league, six Super Bowls and you're in the league and stuff.
You know, but Teddy Bruschi said he's focused.
Come on, man. You can't go to college. I mean, that was awful. Why would he do that to her?
It wasn't just to her. Bill does that to everybody.
Come on, Bill. And that's good for you. Go out there and get your ass whooped for being such a stiff man. Yeah, that was good for Bill.
Yeah,
good. Boy, after that first touchdown, they panned that damn crowd. They panned that damn crowd. That old 24-year-old or whatever sitting up there on that rail, just watch smiling bigger than I'll get out. Oh, Lawrence Taylor
Lawrence up there.
Oh,
Michael Jordan's
yeah.
ass was up there filling himself.
Oh, yeah. And then, boy.
Dad Gummit was up there. Roy Williams is up there filling himself.
Wind
Randy
came
Moles.
Out of them sails, boys.
We're on to Charlotte.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're on to Charlotte. You're right.
Charlotte, yeah.
That's about right. I wonder how that's going to play in college.
All right. Listen, so a coach that has had success lately, D'Amico Ryans, the head coach of the Texans. It's go time now, and he already has talked about this. Speaking to the media yesterday, you hadn't heard this. He's already telling you what he's been staying up about is the key of the game Sunday.
This game, I think, ultimately, it is right now, as I continue to go through it in my mind, I think it really hinges upon both offensive lines blocking two really talented defensive lines. The Rams have one of the best young defensive lines in the NFL, Verse, Fisk, I mean, Turner, Young. It was a young group, and those guys play, they get after it. They play relentless. They're tough. They're going to be a really, really good group to challenge our offensive line, and the same for their offensive line versus our defensive line. We have a really good group up front under the strengths of our team, and we have to, you know, it's going to be a challenge to see how that shapes up, but both offensive lines are going to have to play well, and whoever wins that battle, I think, will ultimately decide the game.
Yeah, I think he's probably pretty accurate right there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this is both of these teams can be, you can say, are driven by their defensive line. The thing is, the Texans have a little bit more behind that defensive line than I think the Rams do in terms of a secondary. But nonetheless, I do think the story in this game is about the lines of scrimmage, right? And I tell you, Ron, people are going to spend a lot of time talking about these defensive lines, and rightfully so, and that's fine. I mean, I can't wait to watch our defensive line eat, no doubt about it. It's going to be entertaining. But the big question here is – D'Amico mentioned one of them, which offensive line plays better. And I have no idea what we're going to get out of our offensive line.
No idea what we're going to
get out of the Texans' offensive line. But I'm going to take it one step further. The other part of it, the offensive coordinator. I got a little bit more faith in their offensive coordinator, knowing what he's working with and kind of working around some of the hiccups and some of the issues that they may have.
You mean Sean McVay?
Yes, yes. I mean, I got a little bit more confidence in his resume. Now, that may be foul. Some people may say it's foul. I've never seen Nick Caley. It's just a matter of having never seen him. The offensive coordinator is going to play just as much into this game as that offensive line is. Hands down. No question about it. And you obviously throw the quarterback in there with it, but it is going to be, this is a game about, yes, offensive line play, but you better believe that 1B, if that's 1A, 1B is offensive coordinators.
Yeah, and I think these things are connected, Clint, in this game, is especially from the Texans end, as you said, got a little bit more confidence in how they navigate it with McVay and Stafford, but with the Texans in is what is going to be very crucial, and I don't think this is just up to the offensive line, is can they play the game in which they are dictating how they go about business? You know what I mean? Like, can they dictate when they want to run the ball?
Yeah.
When they want to pass the ball? When they and not forced into the Rams defense being able to dictate. And that could be dictated by score. That could be dictated by the success they get into the run game. That could be dictated by a lot of things. But to me, is the one thing, again, like you said, I don't know exactly at all what the Texans offensive line is really going to do when they get real bullets, real game plan against a team. But I also really don't know what they look like when their opponent has a pretty fair idea of what they're going to do. Like, that's the other part, and I think that's just not going to be good for this offense anyway. So I think a big key to this is that they get to dictate how Nick Caley's able to call the game, right? Like, the running game's going to be extremely important.
Yeah.
The Texans' defense keeping the game to a space that they can run whatever they want to run is going to be extremely important. Because, as he said with that D-line, I got to believe, as he said, he's thinking up, he's staying up a lot, D'Amico. I think the thing that D'Amico probably really stays up a lot is, you know, what happens and how does my offensive line perform when Jarrett Verse and Young and that group know more times than not they got to drop back to pass.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big key, is can they dictate how they run offense in this game.
Yeah, and look, the other part of this too, Ron, is I think whichever head coach, obviously whichever head coach, their expertise, you got offensive-minded Sean McVay, you got defensive-minded D'Amico Ryans. That matchup is going to dictate how this game goes. And the Texans are just not built right now in a way. I don't think they're built. We'll see. I don't think they're built in a way to get into a quote-unquote shootout. Now, I don't believe this is going to be like Tampa Bay a couple of years ago, but if Matthew Stafford, Davante Adams, Puka Nacua, and company, if they come out there and all of a sudden they have their way and score a few points early on, what does that do for the offense? So this is a D'Amico Ryans defensive coordinator versus Sean McVay offensive coordinator. D'Amico's got to keep Sean under wraps to give his offense a chance to get their feet wet, get a feel for what it is, to give his offensive play caller a chance to get his feet wet and feel what he wants to do and how he wants to approach it and be somewhat comfortable in his first game. So, yeah, man, I it is about O-line play, no doubt about it. It's about the offensive coordinator being able to handle it. But I'm telling you, these two head coaches matched up head-to-head is going to be must-see TV.
Yeah, I don't think that – and maybe we've been able to just watch this group so much – I don't think the Texans are going to allow the Rams to have this as a shootout.
Oh, I don't either.
Listen, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I mean, Puka and Davante Adams and I mean, they got some dudes over there now. And Matt Stafford is, at least at this point, borderline elite. Sean is an elite, you know, play caller and designer. So they got some stuff. But this Texas defense is so good, I don't think it's going to be a shutout or shootout. But if they roll out here, Clinton, and this combination of Nick Chubb and Damian Pierce and Woody Marks roll out here, and it's 2.5 yards a carry, and you know it's stopping them, and you're looking at a lot of third and sixes and longs, the game might be close, but still, That means the Rams get to dictate what is happening, and they cannot. They've got to get out of that.
The point is D'Amico's got his hands full with some really, really with future Hall of Famers.
And
he's got to do. And I agree with you. I don't think it's a shootout. I don't think in any way, shape, or form. I don't think it's a shootout. But D'Amico's got to stymie this offense in a way that's going to allow his offense some breathing room to try to figure out what the hell they are, who they are, what they do well, what they don't do well. D'Amico, this is a team that's going to be driven by their defense. And start Saturday, again, you got Devontae Adams, Puka Nacua, Tyler Higbee, Kyren Williams, Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay. You got some legit dudes coming
out.
They
still got that skinny dude, Tutu Atwell.
Yeah, they do.
They still got number five.
Yeah. They do.
Again, I just don't think that. I don't think the Rams are going to run away from the Texans unless the offense helps them.
Yeah,
I don't
think they're going to run away. Shootout's the wrong word. Point, if you get to where you're immediately playing from behind, that puts unnecessary pressure on CJ. It puts unnecessary pressure on Nick Kaley.
So go away from the game plan.
Right. And the reality of it is, Ron, all year long, this is going to be a defensive-driven football team, and the defense is going to have to keep them in it, and the offense is going to have to make enough plays to win it.
All right, that was Football Talk on Sports Radio 610. It is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. All right, I've been trying to figure out what in the hell happened in Columbus with Arch Manning. Well, somebody who has been an Arch supporter lets us know. We'll see if we agree. That's coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Away, Gus. Play fake. Manning. He'll throw it this time. Oh, it's intercepted. Matthews Jr.
Tyler, man.
Just want to put the listener like they're there.
The enjoyment of Tyler.
At Ohio State.
Yeah, you better, man.
Trying to set the stage.
Listen, that was the most anticipated game of the weekend. And I don't know. We learned a lot, I think. At least at this point. Now, none of it is the end-all, be-all. This is what he's going to be. All of this and that. But I know I learned one thing that I have been wondering for a long time, and then it came about. But this was Dan Orlowski, ESPN, does college football and the NFL. This was his explanation on why Arch Manning had the performance he had.
I would say this. Arch Manning and Sark got Bill Belichicked. And I know Coach Belichick plays tonight. Arch will not see another defense that is as sophisticated, as complicated, as much they change pre-snap to post-snap. I'm not telling America that Arch didn't have some misses. Of course he had some misses. Mechanically, he got worse as the game went on. That game, in specific to Arch, went the way it did because of Matt Patricia for Ohio State and that Ohio State secondary.
All right, there is Dan Orlovsky. You agree with it? You agree with his assessment? I tell you what, Josh Hoover was not Bill Belichick last night. And he actually went against Bill Belichick. But your thoughts on what Dan had to say in his explanation of what happened with Arch?
Yeah, look, I think there's some truth to what he looked at on the defensive side of the football was next level. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But the reality is to me, this isn't about a pass or not a pass. It's about watch the game and evaluate the game and what did you see? And there's no doubt he was going against a schematically ridiculously difficult defense. Not to mention probably the most talented, if not definitely a top three talent defense as well. There's no doubt that everybody that jumped to conclusions and wanted to put this kid in the Heisman chair assumed that he would be ready to, stare this opportunity and this level of adversity in the face and play well. He didn't. Right? He wasn't ready for the moment. He wasn't ready for what Ohio State threw at him. I think there are probably some people out there that anointed him from a ability standpoint. I mean, some of the craziest takes I've heard in the last year, 2 years, was around Arch Manning's athletic ability, his ability to run the football. And I think it was clear in that game when you play against that level of talent, you better be able to beat them with your mind and your arm. If you're Arch Manning, and I do think that both were exposed. I think he appeared to be very young from the mental approach.
That was the part that got me, Clint.
And I think there was some flaw from the physical approach.
The part that got me, Clint. That was the most surprising thing to me was clearly the moment was too big for him. Like you would think like he has had to deal with a lot of pressure being who he is. Every time he performs, there's just more added to him. It wasn't just like he looked like he was like rushed at everything. Yeah. Every one game, of his throws,
the game was moving very fast.
That didn't seem like that. I would not have expected that.
The game was moving very fast for him. The last time that we saw him get run at quarterback, I believe it was against Georgia. They couldn't protect. They couldn't protect the other fella, so they put him in there and thought that his legs were going to be a difference, and it wasn't. You go a whole offseason in today's world. These kids do not see live pads thumping, action, chaos in the pocket, and then you go, okay, your first rattle out of the box as a starter after not seeing anything for 4 or 5 months, however long it's been. It's going to be Ohio State in the shoe, crowd noise, and a ridiculously talented bunch of defensive players and a defensive coordinator. And he wasn't ready for the moment. It's that easy. There's no passes. No, the reality of it is dude has not played very much football. And he seemed to be overwhelmed in the first game of the season against arguably the best team in the country. That's where we're at. And mechanically, I don't think it's flawed. I'll be honest with you. I don't think it's flawed or bad mechanics. I think it's low ceiling. I mean, relatively speaking, you look at both of his uncles. Neither one of his uncles were dropping their arm slot and flipping a cross route, in stride the way Pat Mahomes does, the way some of these other loose-armed quarterbacks do. And he's not – maybe he is down the road. Right now, he's not that guy. He is a stand in the pocket, throw the route tree kind of quarterback. He is a process what's going on defensively, sit in the pocket, get the ball out accurately, and move on. He's not – he can run around against UTSA. No offense right there. Coach, love you. Love your squad, man.
Damn.
He can go – who was the other one? It was UTSA, and who was the other one last year? Louisiana Monroe or somebody?
Yeah, he gave
Mississippi State was one of them. He played against Mississippi State. You can go run around and be one of the more athletic guys on that field, but when you get to the college football playoffs, it ain't going to matter. You're going to have to stand in there and process. And I think that all of that failed him Saturday afternoon.
The one thing that really came clear, and I'm sure, like I said, Tyler's having a field day with this. Tyler has just been over the top with, he's going to win the Heisman, all of them, MVP next year. The one thing, Clint, that I could not ever get past was the way he was talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, a lot of it has to do, and maybe not all of it has to do with his last name, but the way he was talked about, the number one recruit, he was talked about in the manner of guys like Caleb Williams, guys like, Tebow. I mean, those guys, when they came out, when they were freshmen and they came in, he was talked about in a major way. You normally don't see a guy like Quinn Ewers hold that guy back for 2 years. And that always was weird to me. As Texas was driving and they made the playoff last year and they were good the year before, it was always weird to me that Quinn is really holding that guy back. Because I'm telling you, I said it to you before the show, I can't remember who the hell that was that left that Texas game, but Caleb Williams got in the game and that guy had to transfer. It is now the starting quarterback of the New Orleans Saints, Spencer Rattler. He had to transfer to South Carolina, right? And we've seen it. Like, Chris Leak, luckily he graduated, but his ass would have been gone too. He wasn't going to hold Tebow to the bench another year. You've seen many examples. I don't know who was there at Auburn before Cam came from Blaine College, but he was not going to stop Cam Newton from getting the starting job and getting in the lineup. And that was always strange to me that he could not overtake Quinn for 2 years. And I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all, but as soon as that game started, you could see there probably wasn't stuff that just jumped out in practice where Sark was like, oh, God, Like, we got to get him on the field in a way that I'm sure Lincoln did when he saw Caleb Williams at Oklahoma. And was like, God, man, Spencer's a nice player, but this dude here, I can't keep him off the field. And hell, when he came in against Georgia, I thought, well, maybe this is it. Hell, they took his ass out at halftime and put Quinn back in. So that part became more clear that, as you were saying, there's nothing that really, if you take away the last name and everything, there's nothing that really jumps out that says, all right, man, wherever that was in front of Trevor Lawrence, man, your time is just as soon as he gets on the field, we got to go with him. There was none of that, and it kind of came up.
Well, I mean, here's the deal, Ron, and it's going to be a ways down the schedule, but when they get to Penn State, which is midseason for them, heck, it's November 1, so it's second half of the season. When they get to Penn State, how does Drew Aller play against this defense?
Yeah.
Right? Little things like that are going to start to matter. Yeah. Even though it's midseason, it's not the beginning of the year, if Drew struggles, then everybody he's going to get that pass, which it may not even matter. He may play well enough between now and then that it may not matter. But that's going to be the tell. Is, do we look back on this thing and say, boy, Manning was extremely overrated? Or do you look back on this thing and say, this is an all-time great defense? That's ultimately what we're up against here.
All right, coming up, big weekend. Even though they just got a split, a big weekend for the Astros. And I think it's time to pull the plug on something with the Astros. I think you know what it is. We'll discuss that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Altuve bids for a two-run home run. It's gone! Jose Altuve gives the Astros a five-run lead. It's now 8-3.
Just don't lose series, baby. Just don't lose series. That was Altuve as the Astros. They they split that series with the Angels. They have a three-game lead over the Mariners. Mariners dropped some of those games over the weekend, but they go ahead and take that. Altuve behind that, but that wasn't the big story. The big story to me of why this weekend was such a big deal, very similar to what someone just tweeted in. We'll get to that in just a second. I just do want to address something. You guys have to stop getting emotional and not ignore what you're hearing from the texter who likes to call me apparently S Show. It's just Show, Ron, whatever. You know, no need to add.
That's kind of creative. That is kind of creative.
I mean, you can hear the anger of whatever. It's one game, S Show. Damn. I said to him, Well, what do you have issue with what I said? Give the kid some time. It was one game, buddy. Again, folks, I'm not saying, as I said before, it ain't the end-all, be-all of who he is. I'm just simply saying, you can clearly see after he played, after being in the program for 2 years, after having some experience, you can see that usually guys that are talked up like him. I gave examples. I'll give you another. Trevor Lawrence, Kelly Bryant had just taken Clemson to the college football playoff when there was only four teams. They got obliterated by Oklahoma in it, but he took them there. Came and started the next year. Fooled around and got him a couple of games. Then that long-haired Trevor Lawrence fellow was standing in the wings. Duval. He got on the field. Kelly Bryant had to then go to Missouri. Like, that's all I'm saying is, we looked out there, you could see, like, he may be a very good quarterback down the line. He is not, like, the guys like Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, Tebow, we brought up, those guys are not usually held down by seventh-round, sixth-round picks. Right? Like, they usually, like, you would have thought, and hell, I think Quinn probably thought in his mind, or start looking around some of these ACC schools. Maybe I get a year. Maybe I get a year. But usually you don't. That's all I'm saying. I don't think that the guy stinks or that we should end it. But the thought that he was talked up like he was Andrew Luck and Trevor Lawrence and those things, I think you could clearly see, like, that's not the case.
That ship has sailed. Now, again, what does it mean? I don't know, but that ship has sailed. I don't think that anybody in the right mind, even the most avid UT fan, there's no way that you didn't listen to the hype leading up to that game and the conversations around that quarterback, what the last name means, everything. And it was good. Look, it was entertaining as hell. There's no way that you listened to that and then watched that game and said, yeah, this is one of a generational type guy. This is not, I mean, look, the ship has sailed for him to jump on the field. The Tua moment when Tua jumps on the field and throws the touchdown against Georgia immediately. As you mentioned, all the quarterbacks that you mentioned, like these guys that they get their first run and it's like, wow, you're on to something. That it didn't happen for Arch Manning. Again, what does it mean? It's up to you to decide what the hell you want to make of it. But the reality of it is the hype, the conversations, there's a lot of people that are eating some crow and Arch didn't answer the bell. It's that easy.
No, yeah. I mean,
it shouldn't surprise anybody. Hell, be honest with you. I mean, like the conversations were crazy. I mean, I hope, like, I'm rooting for the kid. I hope, like, hell, he would have like met those expectations. But the reality of it is, you're talking about 10 guys over the last 50 years of football that have done that.
I don't mean to set you up. How many years before you started at Arkansas? What was it before you got the reins?
1 year.
1 year. So your sophomore year, you got the reins. Mm-hmm. Your first. Let's even try this. Who was your first game against a real opponent?
Yeah, like I don't remember. It's been so long, Ron. Be honest with you. I remember Damian Craig and Auburn.
Auburn. Do you like that was your first year?
Yeah.
Do you remember feeling as confused as he looked? Do you remember feeling as uncomfortable as he looked?
Yeah. I'll tell you, Florida in 97 was a good one. Set an SEC record for sacks in a game. Yeah, absolutely. I've been there.
Yeah, and I just bring that up because that is generally how I think most young most quarterbacks that get the reins in. Yep. Then there are other guys that you look in there, maybe they're confused, but it doesn't look like that. And I'm just saying,
the guys that you're talking about, the guys that he had an opportunity to join, Arch Manning, that is, had he played lights out and won on the road against Ohio State. He had the opportunity to join the group of guys that you mentioned, the Trevor Lawrences, the Tim Tebows, the Deshaun Watsons, the guys that in college when they took over the reins, Tua is a good one. I mean, when they took over the reins, it was like, look out. I mean, this guy's got something special. He may be running around like a chicken with his head cut off, but he's got something. There's an elite something there. That did not surface for Arch Manning. Period, point blank, any way you want to slice it. That did not surface. Now, if you want to get into the deeper conversations, I do. I think there is – we got to wait and see if Texas has necessary speed to compete with the top 10 teams in America. We got to see if Steve Sarkisian can figure things out and be able to create opportunities for his players inside the 10-yard line with the game on the line against good defenses. The way that some of these other coaches do. Like all of that, there are layers and layers and layers of conversations that need to be had. But the biggest one is Arch Manning had an opportunity to join the likes of the all-time greats in college football that just had some level of it factor. I don't care how bad it is. I don't care that I'm on the road. I don't care who the defensive coordinator is. I don't care how good the defense is. Damn it, it's a tight ball game, and I'm going to make something happen get points on the
board.
Or
I have something that allows me.
Yeah.
Like Vince. I've got something that allows me to get out of stuff even if I'm confused.
Yes. Yes. That ship has sailed. That opportunity was missed by Arch. Now we'll see if throughout I think they play three ducks.
Yeah.
The next
before
three
they go,
games.
Before they play Florida.
So he's gonna have plenty of time to get his bearings straight and keep this thing moving. But the reality of it is the most avid Longhorn fan, there's no way you don't look at that and say, damn boy, what could have been? That would have been a fun ride if that kid would have jumped on the scene all of a sudden and literally today be the Heisman front runner instead of being the Heisman front runner Friday before the game.
Yeah. By the way, are we as a show, are we prepared to pull the plug on Lance McCullers having any kind of high leverage, meaningful appearances for the Houston Astros.
You betcha.
Feels that way.
You betcha.
Hate to say it, but it feels that way.
Yes, indeed.
I think I hinted towards this Friday when you were gone, Clint. I said, I think we've reached the point once Joe said he may be coming out of the bullpen. This may be short term, though. Yeah. I said, I think Lance has probably thrown his last pitch when it comes to meaningful, high-leverage situations, and they tried to bring him in again. Now I will not blame Lance anymore. Like, this ain't on Lance, right? If Joe decides to bring Lance in with the game on the line, and we have a pretty good feel of what Lance is bringing, he's not confident. He is not confident throwing the ball for strikes. He's trying to be real fine and perfect. And then, hell, sometimes it looks like he just doesn't have any idea where it's going. I'm not blaming Lance anymore. Lance should not pitch in any high leverage situations. And to be honest with you, Lance should not be on the playoff roster. If Justin Verlander was held off that bad boy last year, Lance should be held off of it this year.
Boy, you're dead ass right, and it's a crying ass shame right now, given the what's going on. Yeah, it's crazy to think that Lance McCullers can't help this rotation and this pitching staff.
Or the bullpen.
That's what I mean. I'm trying to find the right
staff.
The whole thing. Anybody, anywhere. You take your pick. I mean, let's be honest with you. I mean, at this point in time, there's guys that you'd rather, that still have an outside shot of helping this team long term, that you'd rather have those kind of mop up minutes.
I've got more confidence that Chaz will throw more strikes.
Well, speaking of Chaz,
strikes.
Melton's sub 150 and still getting pinch hits, and Chaz is not, but for the record. Sub
150. Don't come at me about white boy Chaz.
Sub 150. Speaking of.
Yeah, it's just over for Lance.
But yeah, I'm out on Lance. And you hit the nail on the head. My heart would have been hurt. Boy, my Astro heart would have been down and out this weekend had them trio of starters not did their
thing. That was big. Yeah, Javier, six innings. I mean, he goes six innings, no hit ball. Ryan Abreu happened in. Arrighetti, he goes six and a third. He strung together a couple of good ones here lately. One hit, one earned, eight Ks. These guys do got to stop walking, guys. And Lance came in, and Lance's second inning, right, did too much there, is what happened to him. And then Luis Garcia, the big one yesterday, six innings, three earned, all quality starts from all three, six Ks, no walks yesterday in his first start. Those are great signs, especially with Lance. Just at this point, man, it feels unusable right now. Feels like you just cannot take a chance with him. All right, coming up, D'Amico Ryans, he kind of shed some light on a really important thing going into Sunday's game. It's good news. We'll let you hear from him, and we'll continue. Game week, Texans and Rams, and a reason why I think many of you should be extremely excited, not just because the season has started, but extremely excited about what the potential of what you will see on Sunday with your Texans. That's coming up next.